Welcome to another news. I'm Jeff Brady. Today we talk with Ashley Redford Neswick, the principal of Tackany Academy Charter School. She has implemented an inventions curriculum for the students, recognizing the work of Nikola Tesla. But first, I'd like to thank the listeners for supporting this great radio station. And as you know, WBAI is fundraising this month, and it's a different approach to fundraising that will help keep the station's program grid intact for the most part, because that's why WBAI is supported by listeners like yourself. I would like to encourage you, if you are a regular listener to In Other News, to become a WBAI buddy. You've heard this before, and it really makes sense when there is a monthly support for a show or the station. And for only $10 or more a month, you can be a WBAI buddy by calling 212-209-2950, and that will be taken out of your account on a monthly basis. These contributions are minor to the individual, but together, it has a lot of leverage and a big impact. Plus, they are tax-deductible contributions. Now, if we can get maybe 10 or 15 of you listening right now to support this show at the $10 or $20 a month level, or as much as you would like to pledge, that would be great. We can do this. Please call 212-209-2950 and pledge your support right now and during the show. As you've been hearing today during this fund drive, the show is the premium. The individuals who produce and host these radio shows that you've come to enjoy on the station are actually the real value. Please call and pledge your support. Call 212-209-2950. And remember, you can also give at the $50 level, the $100 level, or the $250 level. Why is the show the premium? Well, if you've been a regular listener to In Other News, you know the topics discussed and why it's called In Other News. Exposing the ongoing aerosol spraying by aircraft as part of a larger weather control strategy and 101 other manipulative goals is what helped launch this show. In 2006, I produced a 30-minute radio documentary called Climate Engineers to essentially lay a foundation for dialogue on this topic in a progressive media environment. Well, there's been a lot of response. Filmmakers such as Michael Murphy has produced great documentaries on this topic, opening up a bigger picture to reveal connections with agribusiness corporations such as Monsanto, and you probably know the rest here. From there, the discussion continued throughout regular shows with returning guests such as Rosalind Peterson, Cindy Pakulis, Michael Murphy, Dane Wigington, and many more. And you may have been paying attention to this particular weather we have right now, and specifically the jump in temperature to nearly 60 degrees on Sunday. We have a flowing day-to-day average. We have flowing day-to-day averages from 20 to 30 degrees, and then several days of high-intensity upper atmospheric spraying. As this region became militarized with artificial weather, another massive round of surveillance camera systems loaded up into Midtown. This time, some articles mentioned that these cameras were temporary. When they loaded up the New York Marathon route with surveillance cameras, they didn't take those down. I'm really talking about the performance of the dozens and dozens of aircraft that sprayed the skies overhead incessantly on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Remember, that material falls back down into our drinking water, onto our agriculture, into your lungs. These operations are critically linked with large events such as the Super Bowl, the Winter Olympics, and the four sabbats and cross quarters. Now, a lot of current research has consolidated into geoengineeringwatch.org, but there are still numerous Skywatch sites out there researching and sharing information on these deliberately hidden and destructive operations. Remember, it requires the cooperation of the military, governments, TV weather people, politicians, universities, commercial pilots, and many more who, in order to be involved, think there are good intentions behind this, maybe, or they're severely compromised, or there's a pure lack of honor in their life. All components here are of the human shadow. A topic we also discuss on the show, along with the idea that the events of September 11th, 2001 were an inside job. Now that's become even more popular than the official story, and that's a red flag in itself. Dr. Judy Wood, who's been a regular guest on this show, author of the important book, Where Did the Towers Go? Evidence of Directed Free Energy Technology on 9/11, kicked off many discussions on free energy, but also the concept of a second net. And the second net is what Matthew Deluse, a past guest, referred to it in his articles. Here are two past guests defining the fake truth movement. And it was explained to me this way. It's a bit ironic when an organization claims to want to be independent, but then leans on the establishment for financing. What becomes apparent is that these are collection agencies. They collect people to control them. It seems that life is no longer about facts or science or logic. It's about management of public perception. Refer to the song by The Who, Won't Get Fooled Again, my favorite line, and the banners they are flown in the next war, and meet the new boss, same as the old boss. We can't beat them at their game. We need to play a different game. But Dr. Wood's work here was important to understand in terms of free energy and the lengths that those in power and control have gone to keep that away from the public domain. Those lengths include personal attacks, executing people, buying their inventions, and then killing the inventor, and much, much more. And it goes way back throughout history. You all know how this works. And so it was a logical step in the show to begin to look at the lives of some of these amazing researchers, such as Dr. Eugene Maloff, but also similar inventors throughout history, notably Dr. Wilhelm Reich and Nikola Tesla. With the interviews on Wilhelm Reich, that was the beginning on this show, where the discussions of etheric energy and Oregon energy began to cross into the awareness of your own power of intention. Remember how guests such as Kevin Hinchey talked about how Wilhelm Reich's work was essentially scrubbed from libraries and other media sources in the pre-internet days, but has now emerged to some extent into greater human awareness within the last 10 years. These interviews connected to the discussion of those involved with a greater understanding of how there is active suppression of Oregon energy. And we've had on guests Don and Carol Croft separately to discuss their work in this area in detail. Absolutely fascinating. This is probably one of the 101 reasons for spraying the skies. Now listen carefully. As Dr. Carmen Bolter, another past guest, pointed out, humans have an affinity to the telluric energy in the atmosphere. And if you spray the skies with metallic particulates, it's likely to scramble that human connection with the natural magnetic flows. Remember how Dr. Hall observed that some of his patients who work outside all day tested zero for vitamin D. Well, how is this possible? Another reference, listeners, to the ongoing aerosol operations known as SRM, Solar Radiation Management, or SAG, SAG, Stratospheric Aerosol Geoengineering. Could these particulates be engineered to deliberately prevent the spectrum of sunlight needed for human cells to manufacture vitamin D? These are launching points for your own investigation, and I encourage you, implore you, to do that research and then call in, email me, let me know what you found out. We begin the cycle of sharing information. On the psychological front, we've gone into serious detail exploring what Dr. Carl Jung calls the human shadow. Laura Shapira, Dr. Connie Zweig, and Dr. Paul Dobransky have discussed this topic, revealing an area critical for every human to fully understand. Another topic we looked at is ley lines. If you remember, we've had on Peter Champeau twice, and he mapped out ley lines in New York City. Matthew Deluse has been on as well to discuss the power and dynamics of human interaction with ley line energy for the bad and the good. And we're living at a time where the ley line energy is being manipulated. I recently thought about the musician Robert Johnson and the song Crossroads, and it occurred to me that the story of making a deal with the devil at the crossroads was quite possibly a ley line intersection, that particular area, an energy point. Way back in the early 1900s, before any Masonic monument or church was placed in that area. Now, I really appreciate your participation with the guests. That's why I try to open the lines when technically possible to hear your ideas and comments. And before we go into this interview with Ashley Redfern-Neswick, please consider supporting In Other News by calling 212-209-2950. Become a WBAI buddy. Have the monthly $10 or $20 taken out of your account each month to support this great station. And you can specifically choose In Other News as a particular show to support. And you can go on the website give to the number 2WBAI.org. We heard some presentations from the Tesla Science Foundation's second annual conference last month. I want to continue to convey or impart some of that information that was shared at this event. And what grabbed my attention was a presentation by a school principal on the setting up of what's called an inventions curriculum. It's about teaching young children to be inventive and creative by using the model of studying real people, specifically the inventor Nikola Tesla. Ashley Redfern-Neswick delivered that presentation and is the principal of the Tacony Academy Charter School in Philadelphia. She joins us today to talk more about this curriculum and how it's being implemented. Ashley, welcome to Another News.
Thank you.
As principal of a school, how did you get involved with putting together a student curriculum on Nikola Tesla?
Well, our school is a charter school, which has a particular mission involving problem solving and inventions and innovation. So I'm always looking, as well as all of our teachers, we're lifelong learners, so we're always looking for other opportunities for the students. I happen to have a friend who's involved in the Tesla Science Foundation, and he initiated me into some of their activities they've had in Philadelphia, where they've done Tesla coil demonstrations and other initiatives to educate people about Nikola Tesla. So just getting excited about that myself, I knew it was something that our students would be excited about. So I went to an introductory meeting, and, you know, through conversations, it seemed like we were all like-minded of wanting to have more innovation and problem-solving in our school.
Why would that be important to emphasize Nikola Tesla's work and inventions to young students?
It's part of our mission to celebrate imagination while thinking critically. And Tesla was a visionary. He imagined things that seemed impossible and then created them. Our Tacony curriculum assumes that children are not going to be vessels that are going to be filled with information. We want them to engage in the creation of their own education. So the same way Nikola Tesla had to continue to invent, reinvent, even after having his lab destroyed, rebuild inventions he had worked on, that spirit of like continuing to go back, rethink, analyze. Those are the types of skills we want our students to have, as opposed to just report or memorize or learn from a textbook that's one particular avenue of information and not really be thinking and creating.
Well, I want to get into that area a little bit later.
Okay.
But can you tell listeners a little bit about what Nikola Tesla actually means to you and maybe some of the research that you've done on him since you've been implementing this curriculum?
Well, one thing that is really unique and is exciting is the community that surrounds studying Nikola Tesla's legacy. I really don't consider myself to be an expert on Nikola Tesla or his work. I never want to bring anything into our school when I don't have the absolute expert right information. So that's the time I always seek out a partnership. The Tesla Science Foundation, from the first meeting I went to, I was invited to a meetup group. And it's just people who are all interested in the work of Nikola Tesla. It may or may not correlate to their exact professions during the day, but this passion for learning that everybody seemed to have, this passion to continue the work of Tesla, that's what I want for our students, that type of engagement, that type of interest. And to find a whole organization of people who are also not only committed to coming together on their own time to just talk about the work of Tesla, talk about invention, talk about issues in energy, innovation. That's exciting for me to know there's just an intellectual community that's out there. the other part that's exciting is that this community also already has motivated each other to go out to schools, to do presentations, to want to give to the community, to want to excite kids. And they are not doing it for money. They're not doing it for anything other than to spread knowledge and to spread excitement about science. That type of community spirit I have not found in many partnership organizations. So I feel like just that is really a great resource for students. I think that there's something about the work of Nikola Tesla that inspires that in people, inspires that sort of community spirit of wanting to come together, inspires a respect for differences of opinion because there's so many different people in the community. That's what I really wanted to bring to the students so that they could engage in what they're doing.
Yeah, you really hit on those key points there that I noticed at the Tesla Science Foundation conference while being there. I did feel that sense of being around like-minded people, and it was a really good feeling, actually, to interact with various different types of people, but we all had one common interest, and
right.
That was, I really enjoyed that. Now, did you meet some people at that conference that you hadn't met before that maybe you could partner up with in terms of teaching aid ideas with some of the artists?
Yes, the galvanized community that they have in the Tesla Science Foundation. As soon as the president, Nikola Launcher, put out that we wanted to work on a project of building a curriculum, there have been so many people who've reached out to want to be a part of it. And that's something we really wanted to have as a part of the project, is an openness to hear everyone's ideas, really get input for what people feel is important to include. But the diversity of ideas is what's so unique about this partnership. The fact that there are people who are artists, people who are in the field of robotics, people who are in the field of graphic arts, so many career mentors for students, so many people to inspire students to have a career in art, a career in science. And really, when we look at our education system, I always hear people say that our students are not prepared to meet the criteria for STEM colleges. We're not prepared to compete. And that is on one end, if we're not prepared to meet this criteria that people have set. But on the other hand, if you want to look at why, it's because the students don't want to pursue that. They're not excited about it. They don't believe that they can. They don't believe their ideas are important. They don't believe that people think their ideas are important. So this idea of a whole diverse community of people who've all been inspired and who are all willing to reach out to others, it's really, really going to make a difference for children.
I also got a sense of that as well. There is one individual graphic artist who was able to put an image on a T-shirt and a poster and use a personal digital communication device or an iPad and put it on camera mode. And when you looked at the design, which was a Tesla coil, mm-hmm. a stylized Tesla coil, it popped out in the digital communication device as a 3D image and began to function as a Tesla coil, showing you one way that the Tesla coil, you know, moves from 110 volts to 250,000 volts or around that number. I thought that was a very unique approach and a possible teaching aid. What did you think about that one?
I thought that was great as well. I think that, you know, the idea of not only the content maybe relating to Nikola Tesla, but these innovative thoughts and the creativity surrounding it, and even at the convention that we had, the Tesla Memorial Science Convention in New York, the entire celebration was surrounded by people who were playing musical instruments that, you know, have innovative electric currents, and there was artwork that was inspired by Tesla. And when you just think of everybody who already has innovative based on just being inspired by one person, it can open our minds. But I think I really want the direction of the project to go not just from learning about one person's ideas. Again, this isn't just to learn about the life of Nikola Tesla and have students work from that. It's to work from the inspiration of what ideas can you create and to be inspired by someone who didn't want to give up on an idea, didn't want to give up until he found that perfect solution to the problem.
Absolutely. And Ashley, could you explain to listeners the students' reaction and what's important about the progress that you've seen in the students so far when you begin to teach about Nikola Tesla's life and work?
Well, I have to say honestly that I don't think I'm in a position to really measure that. What I feel we can talk about, though, is the community of inventors that is ready for that and the reason that our school is a good school to have some of these ideas introduced to students. One reason is that students really identify themselves as young inventors, being that our school's mission is about invention and problem solving and coming up with original inventions that are going to be solutions to problems while mastering state standards as well. So we definitely are preparing our students to meet what they need to do criteria-wise to succeed in school, but we're doing it in a way that they love coming to school. Our students really enjoy coming. They look at themselves as inventors and learners. They recognize that they feel the school is a different type of school. And one reason I feel that is about the respect that their teachers and the adults have for their ideas and for their insight, as opposed to just presenting them with things. We have class meetings where students talk about what they're interested in learning. They express their opinions. They analyze together. They can think critically together. I can give an example of a kindergarten lesson where the teacher was trying to present about shadows. But instead of her informing the students about shadows, she asked them what they knew and what they thought. And it almost is like listening to poetry to listen to young children really openly express their ideas. One student said, "A shadow is one of you, but it has no eyes or nose." And another student said, "Yeah, it's like a plain guy, and when the light goes away, it goes away." And as they're speaking, I heard their teacher say, "Tell me more about your thinking." And these were kindergarten students, 5- and 6-year-olds, really starting to understand, my teacher respects what I think about something in the world. And that gives them the confidence to want to continue to explore their world and get more detailed. So definitely this project is about particular methods and particular inventions, but it's about really continuing opportunities for children to explore what's inside of them. And you know, we never know where the next great inventor is coming from. We don't know where the next great thinker is. I like to tell people it's coming from our school, but that's my proud educator, mom heart of the school talking. But I do think the more opportunities you give children to create and to show them the work of inventors who've created things and to say, you know, this wasn't something they created because they had a assignment from their teachers that said to do it. It's something they thought about and they wondered about. So instead of teaching them what they're going to invent, we're trying to inspire them to wonder about things and question and work together collaboratively. And that collaborative work is really, again, what I saw with the Tesla Science Foundation. And so much diversity in personalities and people to be able to come together and have a commonality of wanting to be creative thinkers. That's really where we're talking about. It's not just about science and it's not just about invention. It's about creative thinking. It's about inspiring ourselves and passing that on to others. And not just as what are we going to educate people, what are we going to educate ourselves? How are we going to educate ourselves and bring in more diverse experiences?
Well, how does this contrast and compare to Common Core education reform that is controversial at the moment and a lot of teachers and parents don't want it here on Long Island, in New York, actually?
Well, it's, you know, we're always in challenging situations as educators because standards and regulations are things that are necessary for any kind of public institution to receive funding. You know, we have to have something that holds us accountable. At the same time, I have seen teachers take the same standards and teach them very differently. Certainly, there's something to be said about agreeing or disagreeing with Common Core standards, but I truly believe that whatever standards are in place, to implement it with fidelity means to look at it and present it in a way that children are going to be engaged in it, want to participate, and take it to the next level. nobody says because we got a Common Core curriculum in front of us that, you know, we can only look at exactly the words there. You go by the guidelines and you go to the regulations and you meet the requirements, but if we open ourselves creatively to take it to the next level, there's nothing that prohibits us from doing that. And so some people can take a curriculum framework or a standard framework and feel restricted by it. I will say that whatever framework our teachers are given here, we're going to take it and make it creative and make it innovative. So it can be controversial and people can make a statement one way or another. I just think it's another challenge to face together that I know that the teachers at our school are extremely hardworking, they're extremely intelligent, and they're extremely dedicated to the students. So as we have moved forward, we've been meeting and talking about the Common Core standards. We've been looking about how it fits with what we already do, and we're making sure our school is going to be ready to prepare our students to pass any kind of test we have to. But we're also doing it in a way that we're not going to compromise our belief that children's voices needed to be heard, their ideas are important, we need to have hands-on learning, we need to have imagination, we need to have wondering, we need to have critical thinking. All these things are going to be in place, and it can be supported with Common Core, but it just takes a particular group of talented teachers to really look at it and make it wonderful.
Now, you're in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Yes.
What has Pennsylvania decided so far with the Common Core education reform?
I don't want to speak as a total expert on that, but I know that Philadelphia is in transition still because we have our state standards, Pennsylvania state standards, and then they have translated the Pennsylvania state standards into Pennsylvania Common Core standards, which is using the Pennsylvania standards and matching it to the language of the Common Core standards. And then, of course, there's the Common Core standards for language arts and math. So there's definitely a transition towards that, and Pennsylvania is going to adopt the Common Core standards for language arts and mathematics. But we still have other subject areas, science and technology, these other areas that have not been developed into Common Core standards. As a school here, we're looking at both the Common Core and the Pennsylvania standards and seeing how we can fit it together to align things to prepare students for what they need to do.
Ashley, are there any other schools that you know of that are interested in the direction that you want to go with building a curriculum that you're doing right now?
I definitely think that in terms of the innovative thought and thinking, there's other schools on that track. In terms of specifically really honing in on the invention piece as a tool to help students reach their potential in creation and thinking, I'm not sure about that. That's particular to our mission and our philosophy. I do think that once some of the activities that we have are seen by others in the community, it's definitely a resource that all children in our community could benefit from. We're going to be having on Friday a group from the Tesla Science Foundation come in and do demonstrations of Tesla coils and other science demonstrations for the children to get them excited. We're going to have some of our parents see it. And with building that type of support, then we'll really be able to educate not only the students but the community to what these experiments are, build momentum and excitement.
Now, I know in your presentation you were asking for funding to support this curriculum. Are you asking for funding specifically from certain foundations?
No, we haven't really written any specific grants or anything like that yet. And as a matter of fact, the biggest resource I actually think is the mentorship and the career professionals who would be interested in partnering and sharing their stories with children and students, not just for our school, but for others. I think a lot of people don't understand who are not in urban education that our background experiences for children might not be as diverse to really expose them to careers of the future and technology careers. So being able to speak with people who are involved in different science organizations and foundations, it really does. If you've never heard of a career, you can't dream to get there. Even just hearing about different careers might be something that a student has never thought about could really inspire them to change a direction in their thinking and in their education. So the number one resource I'd like to harness for the school would be professionals who are willing to mentor with students, write letters with students, Skype, participate in writing lessons, distributing them, and letting our teachers look at what needs to be done to align them to standards. that creativity of thought and idea is really, really great. The other part of resources that we need in any school to build a real quality science program, the amount of equipment is staggering when you look at the budget for startup. Our school is a charter school that started in 2009, and each year we've had to implement different components of curriculum and buy different materials for the children. One area we would really like to improve is our technology, having actual equipment that the children can use in our science lab. We've just built a new science lab, but we don't have a lot of the equipment that we would like to teach the children. So that's another thing that we're hoping to connect with through the Tesla Science Foundation and through other people who might be listening and interested in helping, is really to get equipment and materials so the children can create.
You're certainly going to inspire other schools to take on this direction. Can you tell listeners about yourself, how you began as an educator to where you're at now?
No, sure. That's an interesting question. I started actually as an interest in sociology, and that was my early education experience was in sociology. Through my studies in that, I've really just wanted to impact some social change in terms of leveling the playing field for everyone and really understanding that not everyone, even though we have a lot of opportunities, especially in this country, we have a lot of opportunities, not everyone has access to those opportunities. And to reach out to others and provide that, to respect people who deserve quality education, to respect children and families that deserve to have a first-class education in a public school, I think that that is essential and important. You know, just meeting children and students in schools through some volunteer work, it's essential that for me to work until we have quality education. When you hear about the discrepancy in schools and supplies, it's not until you really see a school that doesn't have basic things that children need, and you see the faces of children who deserve a great education and families who would do anything to get their children the best education they could. For all of us not to want to come together and do that, I think that's where we should make changes.
Ashley Redfern-Neswick, principal of Tacony Academy Charter School in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We're going to open the lines to take listener phone calls. Are you ready to take calls?
Sure.
Listeners, if you have a comment or question for our guest, please call us at 212-209-2900, and we'll be right back after this break. Listening to Another News, I'm Jeff Brady. Our guest is Ashley Redfern-Neswick, and she's the principal of the school that is implementing the inventions curriculum, specifically about Nikola Tesla. We're taking your phone calls, so call us at 212-209-2900 if you have a question or comment for our guest. And we're going to go to the first phone call. Go ahead, caller.
Yes, good evening.
Good evening.
Yes, good evening to you and your guest. I don't want to sound like I'm raining on anybody's parade, but this is a question to your guest in terms of, is she familiar with the term transhumanism?
I'm sorry, the term what?
Transhumanism.
No, tell me about it.
Well, have you ever heard of this gentleman called Ray Kurzweil?
Tell me about what you're thinking.
Well, what I'm thinking is that we're somehow technologicizing our children at a very early age, and we have kind of bought into this, okay, well, technology is a part of our evolvement, of our natural process of evolvement. And being smart, being correct, is what it's all about. I mean, if you're not smart, you can't survive. And so I hear in a lot of conversation this kind of like, well, you know, my kid knows how to use a computer, they're really smart, they're really... But in order to be, to me, anyway, in order to be a full human being, as well as that developmental process, you have to be a child at some point. You have to be able to make mistakes. You have to be able to have the kind of adult pressures that technology brings, to have those pressures in the background. And I think what's going on is there's a pressurizing of our children that we've taken for granted. We've sort of like, well, you know, this is the way the world is, that, you know, as a kid, if you're 3 years old, you're supposed to know how to read already. If you're, you know, you're not even supposed to go out and play. You know, people are looking to put their kids in all kinds of different programs, and they're not realizing that this, and you began by saying that your whole process was in sociology. Unless we recognize the social impact of all of this, kind of over-technologizing our children and making them smart, and a lot of times it's not about the kid, it's about the adult behind the kid. Okay? I think that there's some serious implications ahead in terms of our psychological development.
Yeah, I agree. We have to be really concerned about making sure that whatever we do is balanced. And part of the program we do is really listen to children. When we have class meetings or we're talking with teachers, we're really listening to where are they feeling with this? Where are their pressures? Are they feeling like they're expressing themselves? We don't want to have a system, like you're saying, where we're just sitting children in front of technology and not helping them develop relationships and develop their minds socially as well, and having it be well-rounded. One thing I do want to point out, I hear a lot about over-technologizing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But really, when we are talking about our school and different schools that are urban schools, we are talking about access that children need to have to technology. And when we're talking about leveling the playing field, and I say bringing more technology to our school, I'm really only talking about giving the basic technology to children that they would need to create on their own. So it's not necessarily forcing something, I think, or excluding things outside of technology, but really providing opportunities so that children can experience the same thing children experience if they come from a wealthy home or a wealthy district where they might have those things already.
The reason why I brought that up was the whole thing about transhumanism, was that there is an agenda afoot. I don't know if it's a positive agenda. It could be a negative agenda. I don't know. But there is an agenda afoot to push a humanity into a sort of singularity. I don't know if you ever heard of that term, singularity.
Uh-huh.
Okay, well, it's a term that I think maybe do some research on. It's talking about how we can integrate all of these technological aspects of ourselves, because the whole transhumanist process is to say that as human beings, we're not enough, that we need technology because we've invented technology in order to guide our own evolvement. And it starts at an early age. And I took my kids to go see The Hobbit the other day. There was a movie at the same time I went to see The Hobbit. There was a movie called Her, which was about this guy. I don't know if you know, heard of the movie, who fell in love with his cell phone app.
Have you read The Hobbit with your children yet?
Yes, I have.
Great, and I think it's wonderful that you have the concern you have about pushing to one direction or another. That's why, you know, the project that we're working on and the voices we want to hear brings in a lot of different opinions, because I agree that it could be really easy to, you know, shift one way completely or another, but, you know, to say that we can't focus on technology and can't provide that opportunity to children to make choices, decide for themselves, is technology something I want to utilize, or do I want to explore and invent in a way that maybe is more organic and artistic and not utilizing technology? So those are choices we need to let our students make. So I'm not saying that we have to enforce and force students into one way or another, but I would be remiss if we didn't provide those opportunities to the children in Philadelphia.
Absolutely, and I totally agree with what you're saying. I'm just a little concerned with the process and the way that it's going and how. The other day I heard this woman, she had a baby on her chest, and she had this cell phone, and the cell phone kept saying to her, "Very good, very good." And I said, "Is there something attached to that? Is there a reward system attached to that?" And she said, "No, it was just, you know, she likes hearing that term." And, you know, it's almost like this, you know, this kid is going to grow up hearing "very good, very good." And the voice was so robotic.
I know. I mean, so that's why part of the, what I'm talking about, too, that I think what makes it complete at our school and what I hope other people can kind of grow from this is not only, like, looking towards technology and futuristic things, but this dedication of personal connection. And, you know, that teachers or the inventors who are going to come to our school really are caring about a purpose of helping to provide opportunities that might create the next inventor, the next person who is going to innovate for social change. And I do respect that we need to let everybody evolve with that in their own way. You know, if a student is really into technology and even all the issues that go with it, we should encourage that. And if a student has other, you know, drives and desires, we need to help them have whatever they need to succeed. So I agree with you that we can't go all in one way. We have to be really cautious of that.
And the caution is, I think, the operative word here, because technology does offer a lot of opportunities. It makes things a lot easier for a lot of people. But sometimes things don't need to be that easy. They need to be a little difficult, and we need to make mistakes.
Yeah, I agree. I appreciate your input.
Thank
we'll consider
you very much.
That. I really appreciate it. Thanks.
All right.
Great comments and questions, Emmanuel. Appreciate those. We're going to go to the next call here.
This is Brandon. I'm an educator, and I was thinking that intuitive experience, hands-on, is what's missing with the computer. Maybe you would agree.
It can be. Tell me what you're thinking with that.
Yeah, that shooting us off into Tesla world seems sort of a reach, and also maybe a little bit technologically a reach for the mind. Could we start off with something like the Fermi model equivalent, where you use like water pressure and simple hands-on experiences with that to demonstrate the ideas of current flow or voltage, you know, quantity of water pressure, stuff like that. Things like hands-on with a slinky and a weight and a spring to demonstrate Hooke's law, stress is equal to strain, and then wave propagation. So I guess, Ashley, what I'm saying is that perhaps invention, like the proto-human and the movie 2001, starts with play. And I think children and the aptitude to then progress to the next level of integrating that play into invention might be a good way to build confidence and to encourage that spirit. What's your feeling about that sort of going back to basics?
Well, I like it. And one of the things that came up in our discussion with some of the members of the Tesla Science Foundation is that you know, I couldn't understand a lot of things they were telling me because I just don't have the background to really get it. So one thing we talked about in the process was being able to include our teachers, elementary teachers, and high school teachers from kindergarten through 12th grade, and really help when we get some suggestions, concepts, lessons from people who are in the science field, who are inventors, who are innovators, and have our teachers make it age-appropriate because there was some discrepancies in our discussion about developmental appropriateness of just having theoretical models versus hands-on model. And
sure. There's also for the individual, just to say,
right.
Ashley, as the
right.
example, for instance, there's something called the free body diagram where you put loading up like a cantilever, put a weight in the student's arm, holding it straight out and saying, if you were to have to build this structurally, you can understand how you feel the tension in the shoulder, how holding the weight at different, you know, distances away, and you get this whole, you know, sense in the body, and then from that sense of the body, that knowledge is then maybe later on put into mathematical expression. So, you know, that's sort of like get out to the playground and start playing. Physics is supposed to be fun. Have a good luck with
Great.
It and best wishes.
And that is one thing you will find at our school, and I know our teachers are dedicated to, is that we know that if we don't engage the students and to children, really to engage them is to interest them, make it fun, we might as well close up and not bother. So we know we have to do it in that way, and it has to be age appropriate. It has to be scaffolded for their level, for their interest. And I think it's great, though, to have some outside science partnerships, though, to really give some additional ideas to teachers. None of us are experts in any one field. So, you know, really coming together as a community like this, we're going to enrich and we're going to develop a much wider diversity of experiences for students, including some of this play that you're talking about.
And exactly. And Brandon, thank you for pointing that out. Maybe you can visit the school and do a presentation. Go ahead, caller, you're on the air.
Yes, hello. My name is Cheryl, and I think your project is wonderful. I have an exhibit on inventions, and it started in a classroom situation. I'd be very interested in what you're doing and visiting your school and knowing more about knowing how to contact you and so forth. How can I do that?
That's great, Cheryl. What is your invention? Where are you at? Where's your invention exhibit?
Now, I'm actually in Westchester County, New York. My exhibit is being stored, but I have taken it to many colleges and universities and to art galleries and so forth. And I do include inventions by children, but I would like to find perhaps a permanent location for it. And I'd like to expose more children to it, because many of these inventions include what African Americans have invented prior to the 1900s, and at a time when it was very difficult for them to get patents if they could at all. So I think that youngsters are very interested in this kind of thinking that they've done, and in knowing that many of the things they do use every day are inventions by African-Americans. I'd like to know much more about your school.
We have a few minutes left, and I just wanted to ask Ashley, our guest, if you can give out some kind of contact information for the listeners.
Sure. Well, I hope everyone does go to our school website. It's www.taconiacademy.org. We are an American Paradigm School, so you can also go to the American Paradigm School website to learn more about Taconi Academy and our sister schools, First Philadelphia Academy Charter School and Memphis Street Academy. We are open to having many, many partnerships, and I really appreciate the idea that you are talking about children inventing. I also appreciate the idea that you're talking about understanding inventions through history and barriers that different people have faced. One reason Nikola Tesla appealed to us as a project to start was just some of the different social contexts through which he's been viewed, and really having the children be able to analyze that is a high-level social concept as well as scientific. So I appreciate that you brought that up, and I hope that you will contact us at our school.
Thank you, Vera. Could you give me that website again, please?
Sure. It's www.taconi, T-A-C-O-N-Y, academy.org. And again, we are an American Paradigm School.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for calling.
Continued success.
Okay, keep inventing. That's very nice.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Hi, you're on the air.
My name is David.
Hi, David.
Is this Ashley?
Yeah.
Wonderful. I graduated from a science high school in New York City. Come this June, it will be 50 years. And I won honorable mention in the New York City Science Fair. The upshot of this was it didn't leave me with directions, and there was no bridge to a curriculum for me when I graduated at 16, and I arrived at a college campus not even knowing I had to pick a major. So my question is, what's in place? No matter how enlightened the curriculum is today, for students that will give them a bridge and help them to consolidate the information and form a direction and a goal?
That's a really great question. I appreciate you asking that. So one thing is no matter what we do with curriculum, we have to always care about the individual student because we have to dig into what's going on in their lives and how to connect them to their hopes and dreams. And I'm sorry that you didn't have somebody who was doing that for you, because to be able to win the science fair and not really know what you're going on with is a shame for you. I hope that, you know, the children who are able to succeed in the way that you did would have some additional mentorship and people who cared enough to really talk to them about their hopes and dreams. I'm so excited with the Tesla Science Foundation that each person who's coming in, and we actually have a group coming into our school on this Friday, and they're all volunteers, but I know that there is a graphic designer, and I know that there is a musician, and I know that there are inventors. And so I'm hoping that through this relationship, and I'm really putting it out there to everybody, you know, everybody says they want to make a difference. Everybody says they want to do things in a certain way, you know, just to reach out to, in your own community, a school or students for their career days or for their different assemblies they have to teach children about how did you have to go through college? What did that mean for you? I mean, a student the other day asked me something as basic as, who teaches you how to pay the bills? And asking a question like that. So even to back up a minute, we really need, you know, strong adult mentors in children's lives. So if that could be through career opportunities, just to open their minds, how can they dream about something if they've never heard of it? So really reaching out, my own experience just going to the Tesla Memorial Conference in January, I learned so much, and I hope I can commit to be an example for students that I will always keep learning, so that never shutting my mind off to what the possibilities are, and that hopefully they will commit to that too, that we never shut off our minds from learning and engaging, reading and connecting to people, building relationships. I mean, that's how we learn.
Excuse me. How will, you know, when my graduating class, there was about 600 students. So I don't know if your school may be smaller, but how would that size, that amount of student, that student body, can you have that one-on-one? Wouldn't you need some kind of a video presentation? Wouldn't you have to bring it to them in assemblies? Wouldn't you have to bring it to them?
Oh, sure. You're right. Yes, to provide that opportunity to everybody, we do have to have a concerted effort. And part of our school strategic plan is to provide, actually, some of these college and career readiness experiences. So we're consciously thinking about that. But when I say, like, that personal touch, I mean, in our school, you know, we have so many students, but they are greeted by name. There is an adult in the school who knows them by name. So I may not know every single one of my students' names, but I know most of their names. And I think that that commitment is something children just have to have. So no matter how big your school is, you have to know your students if you're going to succeed with them.
Well, that's going to do it for the show. Ashley Redfern-Neswick, who is the principal of Tacony Academy Charter School, that is implementing this inventions curriculum, specifically focusing on the life of the inventor Nikola Tesla. Thank you so much for being on Another News.
Thank you for the opportunity. I know we can all make a difference together, Jeff.
Wonderful. Have a great night.
You too. Take care.
Listeners, please continue to support this wonderful station to have wonderful guests like Ashley Redfern-Neswick on. Call 212-209-2950, and we'll see you next Monday, 10 p.m. Thank you.